Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we are being joined by the one and only Chelsea Green, who's going to be performing with the PG Philharmonic at Prince George's Community College Center for Performing Arts on Saturday, May 22nd. Hey, Chelsea, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me, Jason. I'm excited to talk with you today.
Now, I have so much we want to talk to you, but let's start with the actual event itself. You know, how did this thing come together? I mean, you know, it's a really nice space there. I mean, we did a, you know, full disclosure, listeners, I went out and recorded some, you know, spots when the thing opened, just touting how cool this new space is. So talk about how cool of a venue that is now.
It's such a beautiful venue, and that's actually how this came to be. I was very honored to perform their grand opening weekend. My ensemble, Chelsea Green and the Green Project, opened for Avery Sunshine, and we did a performance that evening, and it was a beautiful event, and we were going to do a follow-up event in that next upcoming season with the Prince George's Philharmonic. That upcoming season just happened to be the pandemic, so we had to push back the concert, so here we are. So we're very excited to finally be able to present this concert virtually on May 22nd.
Awesome. And so what will we hear? You know, I hate to call it a set list, but you know what I mean? What are we expecting here?
Well, it is going to be a very eclectic set for that evening. We have some of my original songs that I've recorded, as well as some arrangements that our ensemble has recorded for previously release projects, and they all have string arrangements so that we can perform them with the orchestra. And there's a surprise tune or two in there as well. So we hope everyone can tune in.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, you're one of the, you know, best known violinists going today. So, I mean, when did you first get a violin placed in your hands? You know, what age were you and where were you? Because you grew up in like Houston, right? So tell me the roots of how you got into violin.
Well, that's very kind of you to say. Thank you for saying that first. And yes, I did grow up with the instrument in my hand. So essentially in the womb, it was already predetermined that when I popped out, I'd be a violinist. So
you could press your ear up and you could hear your violin coming from inside, right?
Exactly. So I grew up in a family of musicians that played a variety of genres, and my mother really wanted a classical violinist to be in the bunch. And so I started taking violin lessons when I was 4 years old. And, you know, I was taking classical lessons, but my father is a very dynamically versed musician, jazz instrumentalist, and that was always in the house. He was always practicing in the home. And my grandfather is a musician. My uncle is a straight ahead jazzer. My grandmother was a classical vocalist. So just this immersion of all different styles and genres. And I played at church growing up. So, you know, as I feel like that violin was about as big as a new age iPad. And I would get up there on stage and play Amazing Grace. And they would just, oh, baby, you just keep playing. You just do your thing. And it was super supportive and encouraging. And I would take classical lessons. I would be in youth orchestra. I took my dad's summer jazz workshop one summer. So I just kind of had a dose of everything growing up. And it really allowed me to never put a label or a stereotype on one genre or one instrument.
That's so cool. So that's sort of your roots, you know, down in Texas, but connect the dots of what brought you, you know, I know you came up and did some advanced studies in music up in our area. Remind our listeners that maybe somehow missed that whole story. What brought you up here to College Park and Hopkins and the like?
Sure. So when I left undergraduate from University of Texas in Austin, I came to the Peabody Conservatory at Johns Hopkins University for my master's degree. And when I say, you know, Baltimore changed my life, there is really no better way to say it than that. I, in just my studies at Peabody transformed how I looked at being an artist completely and how I looked at developing my musicianship far, far, far beyond just studying how to play the viola well. And I would go to open mics. I would sit in with musicians. I would sit in with bands on violin. And, you know, they would really push me to come out of the box and come out of the zone. And it was just so much fun. So when I finished my master's and ended up beginning my doctoral program at College Park, at University of Maryland in College Park, I started playing with go-go bands. And I'll never forget, I was playing with Northeast Groovers one night playing at the Go-Go Awards opening for Chuck Brown. Wow. And he said, "Baby girl, if you can't make that violin go-go, then we got something to work with." I said, "You know what? I feel like this is a charge that I cannot miss." So I really had a lot of fun playing with go-go bands in the area, and just the vibrant live music scene on U Street was very transformative to my development as well. So it was just such a rich opportunity to be able to start my own ensemble in such a culturally and musically rich area as the DMV.
Awesome. Well, before we move on from that, from one terp to another, what was your campus hangout? What was your go-to spots? Were you like a McKeldin Library person? Was it the student union? Was it the mall out there? Was it Comcast Center, whatever they call it now? Memories of Maryland.
Memories of Maryland. That is so funny that you say that, because I will say that the mall definitely has a bit too much of my coin, for sure. But no, I was really, really in the Clarice pretty much all the time. Truly. I was in the music building all the time, either in the practice rooms or doing some sort of study group, because the exams. Oh goodness, the exams. Shout out to everyone who just graduated from college. Congratulations to everyone.
That's no joke.
It's not.
That's awesome. All right, cool. So after all those studies, you're officially, you know, we have to call you Dr. Green now. So tell me, how cool was it that you got appointed, I think you're an associate professor for the string department at Berklee College of Music, and how cool was that?
It's been very fun. I mean, Berklee College of Music is truly one of the, I mean, I feel like it's the most diverse and contemporary music conservatory that is in the world today. These students are literally coming in studying how to be part of this industry their first day of school. So we get to teach so many different varieties of styles and techniques. And it's just so fun, the type of music that they're studying, the type of music that they're listening to. I tell you, they keep me on my toes. They keep me on my toes. So it's been a really fun experience.
That's really cool. And I said you were an associate professor, but didn't you also get bumped up as the acting chair of the string department too?
So this semester I've been serving as the acting chair while our chair was on sabbatical. And that has been quite an adventure. So I definitely was, you know, I was still teaching as well. So it was an adventure. But I tell you, again, I'm just so, so grateful to see how the faculty, administration, and how the students just pushed through this challenging year and made it to the end of the semester. I'm so proud of everyone.
Yeah, how rewarding is that to give back to kids? Because, you know, gosh, you're sitting there playing, you're soloing at Carnegie Hall at like age 16. So you probably see a lot of yourself in those kids. You know what it was like to be their age. I mean, granted, they're not all like freaking prodigies like you at 16, right? But you know what I mean? Like, it must be nice to give back because you remember being in their shoes.
It truly is such a blessing, especially as a young Black woman, to be able to be a professor in a string department at a music conservatory in America, I certainly don't take that lightly, because there are not many Black women professors at music conservatories, at music in music programs at the university level. So it's certainly something that I am very, very honored to do. I feel like it is a responsibility to show up and to be the best version of myself every single day for these students, because I want students, regardless of ethnic background, regardless of gender, just I want them to know that anything is possible. Anything is tangible when you like put the focus and discipline behind it and really work to succeed. You know, you can really accomplish your goals. And I tell them all the time, you know, this industry and this life is going to take you through so many twists and turns that you want to just make sure that you're equipped to handle everything, or as much as you can, as best you can. So my mantra for them is, all we can do in life is plan to make plans. So let's plan accordingly. And I really, really appreciate their dedication to stepping up to the plate. It's been quite an honor. And this spring actually was my first class. Like, I came in with the kids that graduated this year, so I was very emotional, as this is my this makes almost 4 years that I've been at Berkeley. So
wow. Yeah, to actually see one, you know, specific class move all the way from freshman to graduation, that's got to be special. Well, I mentioned it really quick, but let me double back on it really to it real fast. When you're 16 and you're stepping out on that Carnegie Hall stage, I mean, to play somewhere so esteemed and prestigious, I mean, what's going through your mind? Are you nervous? Or, I mean, at that point, are you just like, I got this?
I mean, when I was playing, I was absolutely nervous. I was like, you better not miss one note. You better just stay focused on this fingerboard and nail every shift, nail every bow crossing. I was being really hard on myself. When I came off the stage, I was an absolute mess. Like bawling, just, oh, I can't believe that just happened in such a historic place. And my mother and dad were like, listen, we need you to calm down a little bit. Yes, yes, you just did it. And they were so supportive. I had a lot of family that flew up for the event, and it hit me after the fact. So I was extremely nervous in the moment, for sure.
Nice. So that's, yeah, but you're telling your parents are probably like, hey, remember, you were doing this since the womb, you got this. As we've aforementioned. So playing Carnegie Hall in a crazy space like that is one thing, but then to go do a national television is another. So what was it like? God, you've played so many things, but I'll throw out a couple. I mean, the Late Show on CBS. I mean, memories of that.
Oh, absolutely. One of the biggest memories that I have is how cold it was in that studio. Oh my goodness, it was freezing. And you have to act very much like it is not. and play your acoustic instrument with as much poise as possible. So that in particular, I remember just how cold it was, and I remember between takes we'd hurry up and find somewhere to put our instrument down so we could just rub our hands together to keep them as warm as possible. But of course, when the taping starts, the adrenaline helps to keep you warm. So that was a super fun night. Oh, studio audiences, I remember the time.
Oh, how quaint and naive we all were.
Right?
Nice. And was Letterman cool to work with? What, did he actually, you know, hang out with the musical performer?
We didn't really hang, but he definitely did come over to say hello and thank us for being there. He was a really friendly guy. And it was nice for him to just come over and say hi between takes.
Sure. All right. Well, maybe time for one more, but playing the Grammys, it was the 62nd annual one is when you were playing.
Yes.
man, just memories of being on that stage. Again, what a quaint idea of in front of an actual big audience in that case. But you're televised around the world. I mean, how cool was that?
It was just, that was such a watermark moment, because so much was happening in that moment. That day, Kobe and his daughter and everyone on the planet had just unfortunately passed.
Oh, that's right. That was that day. You're right.
It was that day. And we were in the Staples Center and we were performing with Lizzo and she was opening the show. So it was this incredible sense of heaviness that was felt everywhere through the entire arena. And the only thing that was illuminated were his jerseys. Mm. Above, and that was our eye shot. Like, you just looked straight up and saw that, and it was just this moment of, you know, you are in this house. It was his house, and so it was kind of all the moments of, I cannot believe I'm playing at the Grammys. Lizzo is such an incredibly warm person, just such a good person, and just a phenomenally incredible flautist and musician that's so committed to the integrity of the musicianship and just how the performance comes together. She is literally, she talked to every single person individually involved in that night during our rehearsals and everything. Just such a warm and sweet person. So it was all these emotions at the same time and us wanting to perform our very best to support her in that moment. So it was overwhelming, but in a very peaceful way of strength, like show up and be the best that you can be to represent in this moment for so many different things.
Wow, that's wild that sort of,
yeah,
fate and history and everything would have it that your big moment there on the stage would happen to coincide with such, yeah, a tragic event. And you guys, I mean, you helped us all through it that night. I remember it well. So cool. Thank you for that. All right. Well, before we go, you know, the all important question I have to ask, why is the violin and the viola, I guess I got to throw that in there too, why are they the best instruments that mankind's ever invented? I know you're biased and I'm keying it up as such, but I want to hear why you know, pulling the bow across those strings. Why is that, you know, the closest connection to God we got?
I love that. I love that so much. You know, I think it's something about the warmth and the timbre of the strings for me. Truly, that's why I started playing. It's part of the reason that hooked me to the viola. The more I dug in, I said, you know, this kind of sounds like my voice a little bit, because it was this alto range. It was this more raspy situation. I said, oh, I can get with this, because when I was younger, my mother would always help me from the bullies that would talk about the depth of my voice in elementary school. She would always have some music on by some dynamic vocalist that had a voice part similar to mine. So I would get in the car and it would be a Jesse Norman day, or it would be a Toni Braxton day, or it would be an Anita Baker day. And I just remember associating the sound of the viola with that timbre, and it gave me such nostalgia and human connection. So I feel like it's strings that really pull that vocal quality in and help the voice have another vessel. So I always pray that I'm using my voice through my instrument.
Awesome. That's a perfect place to leave it. Well, thanks so much for joining us. I really appreciate, you know, taking us through your whole life's journey and all the way up to the latest and greatest stop on that journey, which is going to be Saturday, May 22nd, 7:30 p.m. at Prince George's Community College. Again, just an awesome state-of-the-art space there. If you haven't been there, you have to check it out. But I believe this will be virtual. This is a virtual event because we're still in the dang COVID. But everyone, check it out at 7:30 on the 22nd, Saturday, with the Prince George's Philharmonic Chelsea Green Project. Hey, thank you so much. This is awesome.
Thanks so much for having me, Jason. It's so, so great to chat with you.